All right, you got in just before the heckling begins. So once the doors close, anyone that walks in gets heckled. Good morning, all five of you. if it's this few people on a Wednesday morning, I can't imagine what it's going to be like tomorrow morning. So thank you all for coming. My name is Chuck Heinzelman. I am with the SQL Server product team, specifically the SQL Server customer advisory team. And I'm here to talk to you about running BI workloads in Windows Azure virtual machines. So of you out there, how many of you would call yourselves experts in business intelligence infrastructure? Okay. How many of you would call yourselves experts in infrastructure as a service in Azure? Again, no one. Okay, we can work with this. How many of you had dabbled in either of them? Okay, good. What I call this is my invitation to leave slide. Okay. I always like to put up the abstract and talk about exactly what we are going to be talking about in this session, because I have to be here. You guys have other sessions that you could be at if this isn't going to be what you think it is. What we're going to do today is spend a lot of time talking about infrastructure as a service. Okay? We are going to talk about the BI components, but we are not going to spend time configuring business intelligence here. We are not going to go into how to set up a SharePoint farm for BI. That's not the purpose of this talk. The purpose of this talk is to talk about how to do those kinds of things in Azure. Not actually spin them up. It's the Azure portion that is new here. Okay? People have been spinning up SharePoint environments to support BI in their data centers, in VMs, for quite a while. What we're going to focus on is how to do those BI workloads in Azure. And that also means we're going to spend quite a bit of time talking about just what are the different components in Azure. Okay? So that's going to be probably the first half of this presentation, is just talking about Azure and what the different things that you need to know are and how they all interrelate. Now, this is basically the stuff that I've learned over the last year of playing with this stuff and trying to get BI environments running. Now, I had done BI environments and VMs in my data center before. This was a big learning curve trying to figure out how to do that kind of thing in Azure. Okay? So with that, we're going to do a little bit of an introduction, and I've got a quiz here. Is this or is this not part of the BI stack? I've got a bunch of different bullets here that we will go through, and I want your opinions on whether these things are or are not part of the BI stack. Analysis services. Who thinks analysis services is part of the BI stack? Should be everyone in the room. All right. Yes. Analysis services is obviously part of the BI stack. SQL Server Engine, who thinks that's part of the BI stack? About half of you. Okay. I can see where you might not think that. You know, there's, depending on how you classify BI, the engine may or may not be in your realm for BI. I say that it is, mostly because there are a lot of times where your data warehouse is sourced out of, or is it lives in SQL Server. You might be sourcing things out of SQL Server. Analysis services running in rollout mode or even in direct query mode for tabular goes directly against your SQL Server infrastructure. But this one, you know, okay, I can understand where you might not think it's part of the BI stack. Reporting services. Again, everyone. Obviously, yes, this is a big part of our stack. Active Directory. Is this part of the BI stack? No one thinks so. We'll come back to this at the end. This is interesting. It's very telling. SharePoint, is this part of the BI stack? Again, about half of the people, yeah, we've made a big bet at Microsoft on SharePoint being a delivery mechanism for our BI tools. So SharePoint itself might not be a BI tool, but it's the host for a lot of our BI scenarios. So, you know, it's in there. Networking. And no, I'm not talking about Twitter and Facebook. I'm talking about networking, IP addresses, subnets. Is this part of BI? No one thinks so. So very similar to Active Directory. Office. Yeah, again, Office is one of the key delivery mechanisms for our BI tools. It's a very big bet for our BI world that a lot of things are happening in Office and more specifically Excel. So why do I ask this? And why are some of the weird things like Active Directory and networking on this list? Well, when you get into Azure Infrastructure as a Service, or Azure Virtual Machines, as we're calling them, and Virtual Networks, you have to know this stuff if you're going to be doing BI in that world. It is a part of the infrastructure services that we provide with Azure. You need to know, I'm not saying you need to be an expert in all of these things. What I'm saying is you need to know enough to have a conversation about them. You need to know enough about networking to be able to talk to your Azure administrators and say, this is how I want my BI environment configured. You don't need to know how to do it. You need to know how to have the conversation. The same thing with Active Directory. When we get into talking about SharePoint in IaaS a little bit later, we'll talk about how important Active Directory is to have in the cloud. You know, in your data center, if you just wanted a new SharePoint environment, you wouldn't have to worry probably about extra domain controllers and that. It's a different world when we're dealing with Azure. Okay? And speaking of it being a different world, one thing that I want to stress so that I don't forget this while I'm thinking about it, the pace of change in Azure is great. Okay? Things are changing all the time. We do regular releases of Azure features. You might see something that is in preview today, and in a couple months, it's out of preview already. Okay? It's very important to keep up on these changes. And you can do it by reading the various blog posts that are out on MSDN. Scott Gu does a really good job of posting when new features and different things change, and then dig into the MSDN documentation behind them. An example that I can give you is during the preview phase of Infrastructure as a Service, we did some testing. You know, a lot of people on the CAT team did some testing. We thought, based on the numbers we were seeing, that the D drive, which is a temporary drive created on these virtual machines, was the best place to put tempdb for SQL Server. Based on our testing, that during the preview, that was the way to go, and we actually started publishing guidance around that. Well, we have since learned things have changed in the Azure world, and it is no longer a best practice to do it that way. So the days of the best practices staying around for years and years and years, you know, some of the best practices with SQL Server 2005 are still applicable today. Well, that's not the case anymore in an Azure world. You need to make sure you're diligent and on top of things, okay? For those of you that came in a little late, I didn't heckle you. I apologize. I missed the heckling. Just want to let you know that a lot of this talk is going to be around Azure and the infrastructure services that we would need to know and use to support BI workloads. Okay, we're going to talk about some of the BI tools later on when we get into the demos, but we're going to spend a lot of time talking about Azure and what all these different terms are. One other housekeeping measure. I like questions. If you got them, bring them up at the time. I might defer it. And if you do have a question and feel so inclined, please go to a microphone. We are recording these and streaming them. Okay, housekeeping done. So what is infrastructure as a service? These are nothing more than virtual machines. They're persistent virtual machines that live in Azure. From that standpoint, it's not a lot different from, say, a persistent virtual machine living in your data center, running on a Hyper-V cluster, hopefully, or a VMware cluster. Your virtualization platform of choice is not my concern. The big thing, though, is that they're persistent. We have other virtual machines that run in Azure that are not persistent. They're called web and worker roles. Those are non-persistent machines. Those things, they get torn down and rebuilt. You have to make sure that your startup routines on those machines get them into a state where you can use them. These are actually persisted. If the host on this dies and we have to bring it up on another host, it gets the same state that it had when it went down, just like it would in your data center. So we have two different kinds of images up there. We have platform images. Now, these are server operating systems. Sometimes the tools are installed. We have some SQL Server platform images up there. We have a SharePoint platform image. We have various platform images that come pre-configured, ready to go. You just say, give me a new SQL 2012 Enterprise box. 15 minutes later or so, it's ready for you to use, ready for you to log in and use. Okay, those are there. You can also bring your own, though, and that's where the custom images come in. You can take a VHD from on-premises, upload it into the cloud, and use that as a VM in Azure, just as is. It's a lift and shift scenario. We'll talk about that a little bit later. You can also take a sysprepped VHD that you create on-prem, upload it into Azure, and use it as a template to create 10, 15 VMs. You have that flexibility. IaaS has various size virtual machines, from a shared core with less than a gig of RAM all the way up to 8 cores and 56 gig of RAM in various increments. You'll see extra small, small, medium, large, extra large. Then you see A6 and A7. A6 and A7 are the high memory SKUs that we call them. The extra large VM has 8 cores and 14 gig of RAM. The A6 SKU has 4 cores and 28 gig of RAM. The A7 has 8 cores and 56 gig of RAM. You pay based on the size. It's charged at an hourly rate based on the size of the VM that you use. And then if you add other features on top of that, you also pay by the hour for those. So if you have a Windows Server image that you use, you pay by the hour for Windows Server. If you use one of the SQL Server gallery images, you also pay for the SQL Server by the hour. Okay? Dedicated virtual networking. This is why you need to know enough about networking to have the conversation when you're dealing with BI environments. These VMs can live in a virtual network in the cloud that is yours. It's not shared, it's yours. Okay? We'll talk a little bit about that when I get into the scale-out scenario a little bit later. And this is the neat one. You have the link to the corporate network. You can set up a permanent tunnel between your corporate network and the cloud, your personal virtual network in the cloud, more specifically. So what does that give you? Well, these virtual machines that you build up there, you can join them to your corporate domain. Think of it like a colocation center. You have a colocation center where you're hosting servers. You have a VPN tunnel, a persistent tunnel between your on-prem location and your colocation center, and those machines in the colocation center are part of your corporate domain. You can do the same thing in Azure. So, what makes up an IaaS implementation of BI? Okay? Again, we have to start at the Azure level. We can't even talk BI until we're done talking about the Azure level. So it starts with a subscription. Now, an Azure subscription is your gateway, it's your ticket to the world of Azure. This is how you get into things, this is how you work with things. Things are encapsulated inside of your subscription. Okay? That's where everything lives. Within a subscription, you can create something called an affinity group. And for those of you that are used to SQL Server and always on, some of my terms here are going to make you upset. They make me upset. In always on, you have an availability group. Here we have affinity groups. And we use the word availability later for something different. So it's very confusing. An affinity group is basically a grouping of resources where we can make sure that things are located properly in the data center so they work together optimally, so that you can group things so that you have update and fault domains so that different machines won't be down at the same time. That's the affinity group is the beginnings of that. Inside the affinity group, you have storage. We need places to put these VMs. It's just a VHD file, just like you would on-prem. We use Azure Storage to do that. That's where you host all of this information. You can also use Azure, Blob Store, Table Store, other storage mechanisms within your BI solution. But the core of it is we need a place to put these VMs, and that's where the VHDs live, is in Azure Storage. Networking. I talked about networking a little bit. We have a virtual network that is dedicated to you living in Azure. You define the subnets. You define the address space. You define everything about it. It's yours. It's part of your subscription. Then we have this thing called a cloud service. Now, a cloud service is, think of it as a logical bucket and a gateway. Okay? You can put different VMs into a cloud service. And a cloud service has a public IP address and has a public DNS entry. My cloud service for what I'm showing here is techedbi.cloudapp.net. That's my public endpoint. That's how I get to everything that's inside that cloud service. And when I say everything, what I really mean is everything that I allow to be seen through that cloud service. Not everything that you create in there is available. I have 10 or 12 VMs running in my cloud service. The only things that are publicly available are an HTTP endpoint that gets routed to one of them, an HTTPS endpoint that gets routed to a different one, and a couple of RDP ports that are open so I can get into these machines. You have control over what is available through that public DNS and public IP of your cloud service. So inside the cloud service, we have virtual machines. We talked about them. They're very basic. It's a virtual machine. That's all it is. Once you have it instantiated, using it is no different than using a virtual machine in your data center. It's really that straightforward. And now we have what we call an availability set. And this is where I always get confused when I'm talking with people in the database world, because I always go back to availability group. Won't go there. An availability set is what we use with virtual machines to say these two or three or four machines really are part of a group. They live together. So make sure that when we're doing updates on the hosts and we're doing patching, don't take both of these down at the same time, please. Because if they're both down, you lose that part of your service. And that's an important thing to know. In Azure, the SLA that we provide for virtual machines is based on having two machines running the same role. If you have one machine and one machine only in that role, the SLA is not guaranteed. Because we have to do periodic patching of the host servers in these environments. When the patching of the host happens, that virtual machine that lives on that host needs to move someplace else. There will be some downtime for that particular instance of the VM. But if you have two VMs running the same role in an availability set, one of them is going to still be running and providing services to your customers. That's a big thing to know about the Azure SLA. And it's not a BI thing. It's not anything specific to this. It's an Azure concept. Okay? Okay, that's my tutorial around the Azure world. We'll get into some of these more detailed when we go in and show a demo. But I wanted to give a high-level overview of what's involved in Azure, because some of these terms are going to be coming up throughout this presentation, and the terms will come up as you start to use this. Are there any questions before we move on and start talking a little bit more toward the BI realm? All right, let's go. So the first thing we're going to talk about here is the BI in the IaaS gallery images. I mentioned there's different kinds of images. We have a set of gallery images that you can use where SQL Server is pre-installed on them. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, and I'll show you using one of them. So first thing is you get a C drive that is 127 gigabytes. This is a major improvement because during the previous stage, it was only 30 gig. Little hard to get stuff done on a 30-gig VM that you cannot change the size of. You could add disk to it, but you couldn't change the size of your C drive. Now the C drives come out with 127-gig C drives, or the VMs come out with 127-gig C drives. Our gallery images, you have multiple editions of SQL Server out there. You can have Web Edition, Standard Edition, and Enterprise Edition. The cost that you are charged per hour will vary based on the edition that you choose. I'm not going to talk price here. Go to windowsazure.com, and there's a pricing list there where you can get all that information. It changes from time to time. I will say, though, we recently released these gallery images with Windows Server 2012 as the host or as the operating system. Previously, all of them were on Windows Server 2008 R2. Now both of them are available. You can do either Windows Server 2008 R2 or Windows Server 2012 as your OS for these gallery images. And on top of them, it is SQL Server 2012 SP1. I believe there is a CU. I don't know what the latest rev is. So your storage options, I said you could add extra disk. You get the 127 gig right off the bat. And every VM that you instantiate also gets a D drive. The D drive is temporary. Don't put anything on the D drive that you need to keep, even for a little bit. As I said, we regularly patch servers. We might move your VM from one server, from one host to another. There might be a hardware problem on the host that caused your VM to move from one host to another. When it comes up on that other host, the D drive is recreated from scratch. Anything you put there will be gone. That being said, it is a good temporary scratch environment. I use my D drives on my images when I want to install things. I'll put the bits on the D drive rather than putting them on a VHD that's hosted in blob storage. I use the D drive. So the storage options, the size of your D drive will vary based on the VM size that you choose. Another thing that will vary based on the VM size that you choose is how many disks you can attach to that VM. On an extra large VM, you can attach up to 16 additional VHDs for storage space. And those can be up to a terabyte in size each. So you can attach up to 16 terabytes of storage onto an extra large VM. And if you really want that to show up all as one drive letter, you could use OS level striping across those 16 to get it as a single drive letter. Okay? The BI tools in these gallery images are installed by default, some of them. Reporting services native mode is installed. Analysis services multi-dimensional mode is installed. And of course, the SQL Server engine is there as well. And the nice thing is, since we have 127 gig on that C drive, the install media for SQL Server is also on the C drive. So if you wanted to, say, use a tabular mode analysis services instead of multidimensional, you could run the installer and actually install the tabular mode. The media is there. Okay? And then the licensing, as I mentioned, is pay as you go. With these images, you pay by the hour. Okay? You pay by the hour for the operating system, you pay by the hour for SQL Server. Now let me warn you about something. The hour is not a traditional clock hour. So if I start a VM now and shut it down 50 minutes from now, what time is it? Perfect. It's 8:54 right now. If I start a VM right now and I run it for 10 minutes, how many hours do I get charged for? Two. Not one. Two. because it goes on the top of the hour. So I created it in this hour, and I also used it in next hour. Something to be aware of if you are doing things where you're spinning up a VM and spinning it back down. If you have a short process, try not to cross that hour boundary. It'll save you some money. Question? Oh, I guess I should have gone to the keynote. apparently now they're charging by the minute. So, okay, ignore what I just said about the billing model. It is still pay-as-you-go licensing, but again, things change very rapidly in the Azure world. I pointed that out earlier. This is more proof of it. Go to WindowsAzure.com for all your billing needs. All right. Let's talk about actually using these. I'm a kind of person, I don't like a lot of PowerPoint, so let's actually go into, let me log back into my machine. Oh, of course, okay, there we go. Okay, let's go back, and my colleague in the front row will like this, and I have problems with video right now. Huh, it cut off half my, let's try and switch this back. If not, we can make do. Huh. Okay, if someone can page one of the AV guys. let's see here. Let me just try one thing. Oh, that's why. Somehow it got set to extend. Okay, there we go. Much better. Let me set my resolution. Sorry about that. When my machine went to sleep, apparently it went into a different video mode. So we'll just adjust that. Oh, no, there we go. All right. So what we're going to talk about here is using one of the gallery images to run a BI workload. Okay. So I have, let me go into my Azure Management portal here. I have a VM called TechEd BI RS1. This is, what I did was I went in, I just came in here, said new, compute virtual machine from gallery. And here, I'm going to zoom in on these. Ooh, wrong button. There we go. So you can see we have a bunch of different gallery images here. You can have just a raw Windows Server image, or we have all of these SQL Server images. Let me choose one, this, and we'll get a little bit more detail. So this gives me SQL Server 2012 SP1 Enterprise. And this one happens to be running on Windows Server 2012. So what I did was I just came here and said, I want to create this image. I walked through this wizard. It asked me what data center I want to use. You know, do I want to use East US, West US? Where do I want this to live? Do I have an existing network defined? Do I have a cloud service I want it to be part of? Takes me through the wizard, and then it builds a machine for me. And what I have here is the dashboard for that machine. And you can see it gets an internal IP address that is part of my virtual network. The host name of the machine is TechEd BI RS1. And you see this public virtual IP address. This is that IP address that I talked about with the cloud service. So my cloud service is techedbi.cloudapp.net. It has a public IP address of 168.61.144.106. That is publicly addressable over the internet. The only thing that you can get to behind it, though, are things I poke holes for. So if I look at my, what we call endpoints, each virtual machine can have an endpoint, or multiple endpoints. In this case, I have a public endpoint for remote desktop. So if I open an RDP session and go to techedbi.cloudapp.net and give it a port of 61.101, it's going to network address translate me back to port 3389 on this VM so I can get through with an RDP connection. Okay? Now, I tend to close down as many things as I can on my VMs. I don't like having public endpoints available unless I absolutely need them. In this case, the RDP endpoint is more of a backup to what I was doing because I have what's called a point-to-site virtual network set up between my machine and my cloud network. So if I just show you real quick under networks, I have this TechEd BI network that I'm connected to. That's a VPN tunnel up into the cloud. So my machine, my local machine, is actually on my cloud network, just as if you were VPNing into your corporate network. It's in preview right now, but this is really going to be a preferred way to work with your virtual machines in the cloud, because if you had to use that RDP endpoint, you're going out over the internet and you're coming in through that direction. You have to poke a hole in your cloud service. This way, I literally VPN in just as if I were VPNing into work, and then I can just remote desktop right into the machine by name, and it can resolve the IP address. So it's a very nice feature. Like I said, it was being a little flaky earlier in the week, so I created the RDP endpoints as backups in case I needed to use them. As a matter of fact, while I was prepping about 15 minutes before the session, my VPN connection dropped in this convention center, so I was a little nervous. But things seem to be working right now. So let's go into the remote desktop session. And like I said, this is a direct RDP right over the network. I'm VPN'd in, so everything is here. This is the desktop that I get with that server image. Now, I want to show you a couple things. I'll go into services, and you can see here that I have SQL Server, Agent, Analysis Services, Integration Services, and Reporting Services. These were all installed for me. And it's set up correctly so that it uses the name that you give it when you tell it to provision the VM. We all know that SQL Server doesn't like having its name changed. So the gallery image process takes care of all of that for you. Okay? And your tools are here too. So I've got SQL Server Management Studio connected to the database server and to the analysis services server. It's all right here, browsable, everything is working. Now when you come in, when you get this initially, your reporting services environment is not configured. It's installed in files only mode. So you come in and using the familiar tools that you use today, this is one thing I really want to stress here, these are the tools that you are used to today if you're doing BI. Nothing different. The only change is where this virtual machine is running. The virtual machine at this point, it's a virtual machine, doesn't matter where it is. It could have been in the cloud, could have been on your local data center. It's all the same at this point. So I came through and did a standard reporting services native mode configuration. And, you know, I've got my report portal, all that, everything as you would expect it to be. So now, I do want to be able to get at this without the VPN. I want to be able to deploy reports to it without the VPN. This is where things get a little bit different. Because what we need to do is we need to create an endpoint. So I come back into the management portal, and I come into my endpoints for that virtual machine, and these are per virtual machine. I can have endpoints on some machines and not on others. It's not that I'm opening it up to every machine in my cloud service. I'm opening it up for a specific machine. So I come in, I want to add an endpoint, and this one I'm going to name it HTTP. I'm going to use the TCP protocol. Public port is 80, private port is 80. Pardon me. Now, while that is creating, it's going to take 30 seconds so to create because it has to do some reconfiguration work. Basically, what's happening here is this is poking a hole in my cloud service. So techedbi.cloudapp.net, when this configuration is complete, will now have a port 80 access where I can come in on port 80 and that request will get routed to my reporting services machine on port 80. Now you can obfuscate your public ports like I did with a remote desktop. My remote desktop port, I didn't publish 3389 as my public port. There's two reasons behind that. Number one, it's a well-known port. You're going to be opening yourself up for intrusion attacks. Okay? You don't want to do that. Number two, and this is the more important reason that I didn't do it, believe it or not, you can only have a public port on a single machine within a cloud service. Makes sense. You have a URL, you give it a public port, that can only go to one machine. So if you have three or four machines there and they all want to share, in this case, RDP, you have to obfuscate that port. You have to use a different port number for each machine. Okay? So this HTTP endpoint has now been created. So I'm going to open up Internet Explorer. Oh, that's a beautiful picture today, isn't it? I'm going to go to http://techedbi.cloudapp.net/reports. It's going to prompt me for my creds. And yes, I am going over HTTP here, so yes, I did send those in clear text. It's a test account, it's a test user, it's fine for me for this. You could have done SSL, which I will do in a later demo. So since I had that SSL endpoint already set up, I couldn't use it here. But so we're here. We have this standard reporting services screen. I don't have anything deployed here. Now what do I do? Okay, I go back to my standard tool set. If you want to use Report Builder, you can use Report Builder. I'm going to go into bids. Sorry, SQL Server Data Tools. It's hard to teach an old dog new tricks. So what I have here is I have just a very simple report project that I'm going to open up. And again, very, very simple. Hello, Tech Ed. What I want to show you is if I go to the properties of the project, and I zoom in on this, you see that my target server URL is teched-bi.cloudapp.net/report server. That's how we're going to deploy the reports. So even though it's living in the cloud, we're going to deploy these reports to that web service just as if it were living in your data center. So I'm going to deploy this. And what BIDS is going to do is it's going to go out and connect, and it's going to prompt me for creds. So I put in the same creds I used before, or creds that have the rights to publish a report. And what it's doing now it's authenticated me, and it's actually deploying that report out to that report server. So you can see here, deploying report. One succeeded, one deploy succeeded. All right, let's come back into Internet Explorer. Voila, there's the report. And let's just run it to make sure it actually functions. Hey, there we go. Okay, so what we've done here is we've used a SQL Server Gallery image. I configured reporting services because I didn't want to bore you to tears more than you already are. We created the HTTP endpoint, and we deployed a report over the internet to this service. So the point I want to make here is that you're going to use standard tools that are familiar to all of your users. But this is why things like networking and Active Directory come into the BI world now. In order to get this working for your users, you need to be able to have the conversations with your IT departments or the people who control your Azure world to be able to open up the appropriate holes that I opened up here. Okay? You need to know enough to have that conversation. That's all. All right. So now let's talk about it in the other direction. How do we do it without the BI gallery images, or without the SQL gallery images? Question? Yeah, on this image, everything's on the C drive, yes. So you would want to configure things the way you want them to be. And that's where what I'm going to talk about now comes in handy, and there's another reason for doing what I'm about to talk about, and I will bring that up when we get there. Hi, Adam. Thanks for coming in late.
Thanks for having me,
Chuck. Anytime. I had to heckle someone. So, we have the concept of bring your own image. So what you can do a couple things here. You could build a virtual machine on-prem and bring it into the cloud. So let's say you have an existing reporting server that you just want to put, you want to stop hosting it in a data center and you want to host it on-prem. If it's already a VM, that's really easy. You take the VHD file and you move it into the cloud, you build a VM off of it, and you go. If it's a physical server, you might need to do a P to V, a physical to virtual, make a VHD out of it, upload that into the cloud. VHD, not VHDX. Right now, we only support the VHD format. So if you have a VHDX file, you need to convert it into a VHD. Make sure you're using VHDs for things that you want to upload into the cloud. Now, that's a lift and shift scenario. I just want to take an existing machine and run it in the cloud. You might have a situation where I want to create a template and run all that stuff in the cloud and use that machine multiple times. SQL Server 2012 with SP1 CU2, we released the ability to sysprep almost everything in SQL Server. And a lot of people don't know this came out. Before, you could only sysprep a couple little pieces. Now you can sysprep analysis services. You can sysprep reporting services. You can do all of that. So you can create a sysprepped image to use up in the cloud. It's very useful. You can either do it on-prem, or you can actually build it in the cloud, which for me is my preferred method. Talked about the P to V. You know, take a physical machine, make a VM out of it, and upload it, and just run it in the cloud. Your users won't know the difference as long as you have things configured properly. And then building a virtual machine in Azure. Now, this for me is one of the easiest ways to do things. So I could build a machine on-prem, sysprep it, then take that 30 or 40 gig VHD and push it over the wire into Azure. Or I could start from a Windows Server gallery image, just push my software up to it, load the software in the cloud, sysprep it, and turn it into a template. We'll talk about that. Now, here's another big reason to look at using the Windows Server gallery images or your own image rather than a SQL Server gallery image. Remember, with the SQL gallery images, you pay by the hour for SQL Server, or by the minute, or however we're charging it these days. But you're paying a subscription, a usage-based fee for SQL Server. If you have the right licensing agreement in place, where you have what's called license mobility, you can actually use your own SQL Server licenses in Azure. So if your company has license mobility, and you have the licenses to spare to move up to the cloud, don't use the SQL Server gallery image. Because if you use that gallery image, you will be charged a subscription fee for SQL Server, even if you have your own licenses. That's just the way it is. So if you are using license mobility, you want to build your own. Don't use the SQL gallery images. Okay? And again, we talked about the storage options before. Storage options are based on your VM size. So, again, back into demo mode. I want to get away from the PowerPoint. We're going to talk about how to move a BI image into Azure. And really, it's not a BI image specifically. It's moving any image into Azure. So the first thing we're going to do is I'm going to show you in my management portal a couple of things. So when I come to New Virtual Machine from Gallery, over here I have several options. I have platform images, I have my images, and I have my disks. You might be asking yourself, Chuck, what is the difference between my images and my disks? Nobody? Oh, man. Not even my friends got that one. Anyway. You're supposed to say, someone's supposed to say, Chuck, what is the... Sorry. It's early. I understand. So now they're debating if they're my friends or not. Great, thanks. So under my images, you can see here that I have a couple of images that I've built for other projects that I work on. These are, you know, I can come in here and just like a gallery image, I can use this. These are sysprepped images. So what it's going to do is if I try to instantiate one of these, it's going to make a copy of it, restore it, assign the name, do things that you would do if you were, you know, going through and just building something off of a sysprep VM on-prem. Now, the other one is my disks. Now, I don't have anything in here right now. We will in a little while. But my disks are where you have what we're calling the lift and shift scenario. That's not a sysprepped image. It's not going to try to do all the stuff that you do after sysprep. It's going to take what you have and use it, okay? So, how do we get the VHD up into Azure? Well, the first thing we do is we go into PowerShell. And for those of you who don't know, this is the PowerShell ISE. It's a great tool. I love using it. It has IntelliSense. It's just wonderful to work with. This first command, add Azure VHD. What this does is it takes a VHD that you have locally, which is your local file path, and uploads it into that destination, which is a blob storage account in Azure. Okay? Once it's up there, it's available for you to use. This will take a while, so I'm not going to do it here. We're dealing with the laws of physics here. We can't exceed the speed of light. I cannot move 30 gig instantly during a session. So we will not run this. I have, just like any good cooking show, one of these things already in the oven that we can now pull out and use. So I have a couple of disks up in the cloud. So the next thing I want to do is talk about the add disk option. Now what this is where I have a VM that I just want to, what we're calling the lift and shift scenario. I want to take that VM, just move it into the cloud. So to do that, I have to take that VHD that I uploaded and make it what's called an Azure disk. So when I run this, I'll let it run and I'll explain it while it's running. I need to name that disk, and you'll see where this name comes in later. I need to give it the physical media location in blob storage where I put it, the full URL. I give it a label, and I tell it this is a Windows disk. And this OS flag on this PowerShell command is the important one here. This is the one that if you don't say OS equals Windows or OS equals Linux, whatever the OS happens to be, Azure is not going to recognize that this is a disk that can be mounted for a VM. It's just not going to. Okay? So now that that's done, I can come back into my portal. I'm going to do a refresh of my portal real quick here. And what I'll do now is I'll go in and try to instantiate another image. If my portal ever comes up. Everyone out surfing the internet right now? No, sorry. So if I come into compute, let me let my portal warm back up. But what it's going to do now, what we should see when I do come up and bring this up, is we should be able to go in here and see new compute from gallery. If I come to my disks, there's the image that I just put there. So I had the VHD in blob store. Now I have the disk that has an OS image on it. We can see that it's a Windows OS image. If I select this, I can now start walking through and creating this VM based on that image. So it's just going to use that disk. Okay? The next thing that I want to talk about is the templating. So this is where I have a sysprepped VM all ready to go that I want to use to be able to make multiple copies of it. Okay? So for this, I'm going to go to my add Azure image PowerShell commandlet. And what this one does is it takes, again, the media location and the OS and the image name. So instead of a disk name, we now have an image name. So while this PowerShell is running, completed, that's actually fairly quick. If I come in here under virtual machines, you can see I have an images tab, and I now have, where before I had the two images that I showed you in the creation dialog box before, I now have a third here, the TechEd SysPrep demo. If I zoom in on that, this one was just created. So I can come in here and say new virtual machine from gallery, and come to my images, and now where before I had two, now I have three. So once you get the data into Azure Storage, once you get that VHD up there, it's just a matter of running the appropriate PowerShell command to say, make this a template or make this a disk. Now, you could do it through the portal. So, for example, under images, I can say create, and I can browse to a VHD URL here. I could do this from the portal here, but I chose to do it through PowerShell. Okay. Another thing that you can do, and this is where we can talk about, this is what I was talking about with building my own in the cloud and saving the upload time. If I'm in Azure and I build the virtual machine, I can either delete the virtual machine definition and then it stays as an Azure disk and I can use that to create a different virtual machine, or I can sysprep it and shut it down. And then once that happens, I have this button down here that says capture. And what capture does is it allows, this is basically that the PowerShell command that I ran to add the Azure template. This is what the capture, or the Azure image, that's what capture does for me through the UI. I could do it through the UI, or I could do it through PowerShell. I prefer to do things through PowerShell because there are some things that you can do through PowerShell that you can't do through the UI. And there's also, with some of the preview stuff, there's some things that are going the other direction as well. Okay. Any questions about bringing your own stuff for BI up to the cloud? All right. Now we get into the fun stuff. So what we're going to do now is we're going to talk about building a full BI farm in Azure. And this is where the fun begins. What I have built is a scaled out SharePoint farm in the cloud. I created everything from nothing. I created my virtual network, defined how that wanted to look. I had to create my domain controllers. I had to create my database servers. I had to create my SharePoint farm servers. I had to create my analysis services SharePoint mode servers. Did all of that in Azure. So let's walk through what I've done. So you can see here, I have a lot of VMs listed out here. We're going to walk through from the beginning of this creation and everything I had to make to do to get this up and running, this BI environment up and running in the cloud. So the first things we needed are under settings here, I needed to create an affinity group. So I have my TechEd BI affinity group. Now remember, the affinity group is how things are grouped together, the different servers, the different storage accounts. It's basically making sure we have things set up in the data center when we provision this for you so that it's going to, you know, work together well. So I put it all into, I create an affinity group first. So then the next thing I need is a network. So I came in here and I created my TechEd BI network. Now networks are a tricky thing. There are a lot of things about networks that you cannot change once the network has been created and deployed. Your address space. The address space that is defined for your network cannot be changed once you deploy machines into it. I can add subnets, I can add DNS servers, but I can't change my core address space once I have machines deployed. So this is where you really need to sit down and figure out with your networking people how you want this network in the cloud to look. And where things like the on-prem connectivity come into play. You know, if this is going to be connected to your on-prem world, mine is not, But if you want this connected to your on-prem world in your data center with a VPN tunnel, the subnets and the address space in the cloud needs to be compatible with what you have on-prem. Otherwise, you aren't going to be able to talk between these machines. So this is where, in my world, networking comes into BI, because you, as the BI professional from the IT pro side, need to be able to talk to your network administrators about how you want things configured. You don't need to be able to do it yourself, but you need to be able to have the conversation. Okay? So we can see here, if I zoom in, my address space is a slash 17. I'm not going to get into all these terms and everything. I set things up and logically grouped my servers into different subnets. So I've got all of my Active Directory servers living together. I've got my database servers living together. I've got my application, my web servers living together. All networking stuff, we're not going to dig deep into why I did that way. If you want to talk more about that, come find me later. I'll be downstairs at the Microsoft booth. But once I had the network, now I need to start building other things to put into this network and building things to deploy. So I started with a cloud service. So my cloud service is TechEd BI. And you can see here, my site URL is techedbi.cloudapp.net. My virtual public IP address is, we talked about this before when we were looking at the virtual machine, 168.61.144.106. So once I created that, then I could start deploying things to it. So first of all, I had to build domain controllers. SharePoint needs to be close to its domain controllers. And since we're hosting our BI world here in SharePoint, we need to have a domain controller. In this case, I created my own domain, and really, we need to have two domain controllers. Why do we need two? Fault tolerance and SLA. Yes. We need to have two of every role in Azure to get the SLA. So I created two domain controllers. If I go into my domain controller in the virtual machines, I can see that I have DC1 and DC2 right here. And if I drill into one, you'll see that I created what's called, we talked about this, an availability set. So having these two machines living in the same availability set means that it tells Azure, if you're bringing one of these down for maintenance, don't bring the other one down. Because I want that high availability, I want that SLA. So that's how we group these together, and that's how we tell Azure that these two machines should live together. Now, both of my DCs are, I use small. I don't have a lot of load on the system. I used a one-core, 1.75 gigabyte of RAM machine for each of these. Now, if you do have significant load and you're starting to see pressure on your domain controllers, you might need to move it to a larger size, but you can do that on the fly. The machine, of course, will come down because it needs to be reprovisioned, but that's where having multiple of them running helps you. Okay? So the next thing I need to do is build my database servers to host my SharePoint environment. I decided to use always-on availability groups for these because I want my high availability. So I built two database servers, DB1 and DB2. I'll go into DB1 here, and you can see that DB1 is in the DB availability set, and I have the two machines in it right here. If I come back to my dashboard, from the Azure standpoint, all I had to do was provision these machines. I went in and configured all of my networking and all of the other things and installed SQL Server and configured my cluster for always on just by remote desktoping into the machine and working with it. Again, no different than any other virtual machine that you would work with. That's a real big point I want to stress here. In a lot of ways, once you get the Azure stuff under your fingers, this is no different than what you would do in any other situation. There is a little difference when you deal with always on. Right now, our virtual machines can only have one IP address per machine. Always On has something called the listener, which is a floating IP address between multiple machines that you use to connect to your databases. Right now, that is not supported in Azure virtual machines because the machine can only have one IP. Okay? I don't have a solution for that other than the fact that at always-on availability groups can function in the mode just like the old database mirroring under certain conditions. If you only have two replicas, you have a primary replica and a secondary replica, and that secondary replica is not a readable replica, you can use the mirroring connection string style to connect to an always-on availability group and have automatic failover between the two machines. Okay? So that's very important to know. It's getting a little out of the BI realm, but this is really more of a BI infrastructure discussion. So SharePoint, when connecting to its databases, supports the failover partner key on the connection string. So if you set up Always On to work like old database mirroring, you get the benefits of Always On, but you can still connect to it through SharePoint without the listener and have the high availability. Okay? So then I spin up a SharePoint farm. So in my case, I'm breaking the SLA rules. I only have one SharePoint server running in this farm. Okay? I have a WFE that's doing other things, but I only have one app tier. But it's just like installing SharePoint. And now SharePoint can be sysprepped under certain circumstances. And because this is meant to be a scale-out deployment, I wanted to do that, and I wanted to be able to instantiate new SharePoint boxes quickly. So what I did is I built a SharePoint VM template. I created a new Windows Server machine. I installed the SharePoint prerequisites. I installed the SharePoint bits. Now, this is SharePoint 2013. I installed the SharePoint bits, but did not configure the farm. That is the key. If you're going to sysprep SharePoint for this, do not configure the farm. Running the farm configuration, once you've done that, you can't sysprep because there's things with the machine name that SharePoint relies on. It gets really ugly. But if you install the bits, then sysprep the operating system, you can make a template out of it. So if we come back here under images, I have my TechEd BI SharePoint image. Has the bits installed. If I want to spin up another web front end, I create a new virtual machine based on this template, go in and say, join the farm. SharePoint takes care of it. It's a real quick way within 15, 20 minutes to add capacity to your farm. Okay? Then I went through and I configured all the BI tools and everything, and now I need to be able to get at that information. So I come in and I go to that virtual machine that was running my app tier. It was also running my website, so I went to it, and I created an HTTPS endpoint because I wanted this communication to be over SSL. I didn't want my passwords going in clear text, so on and so forth. Created a certificate, loaded it on the client or on the server so that I can actually do SSL communications. Now, one thing I do want to show you, I have a web front end machine. If I wanted to, I could create a load balanced endpoint. Okay? The load balancer here, I can tie that to the HTTPS endpoint that I already have. I'm not going to commit this because I don't want to run in a load balanced mode in my current configuration. But if I would do this, I would then be load balancing between multiple machines. So when I come to techedbi.cloudapp.net on SSL on port 443, the Azure load balancer would deal with routing my machine from one to the other. It's not a health-based load balancer, but it is load balancing among multiple machines. It does have probe capabilities, so it can see if the machine is up or down. but it's not doing any health checks on the machine. Okay? So, as I mentioned with the SharePoint image template that I created, adding a new VM for, say, a web front end for SharePoint, if you realize that your BI farm is web front end bound, I can create a new VM based on that template. It takes, you know, 10, 15 minutes. I can log into that VM, add it to the SharePoint farm. Depending on your farm complexity and how busy it is, could take some, you know, that will depend on how much time that takes. SharePoint automatically, when you add a front end, automatically deploys your web solutions to it and everything. Come back into Azure. Once everything on the SharePoint side is configured, come into Azure, add the load balanced endpoint to that virtual machine. It is now accepting web requests. So within an hour, maybe a little longer, maybe a little less, depending on your environment, you can scale out and have additional resources running. Something that a lot of IT departments can't, you know, you just can't scale at that level in a lot of places. So that's one of the beauties of doing this. So now I want to get at that. So I come in here and https techabi.cloudapp.net, and yes, it's a self-signed certificate, so I do get the cert error. So I log in here, and it's a fully functional PowerPivot site running in the cloud. So I can come into my PowerPivot gallery here. I've got a Contoso Motors, go figure, Contoso has to be. I have a Contoso Motors workbook uploaded here. I can interact with Excel services. This is all, there's embedded PowerPivot here. So this PowerPivot model was loaded into an AS server in the cloud. You can scale those out now as well very easily by spinning up. Now, unfortunately, remember how I said almost everything in SQL Server can now be sysprepped? This is where the almost comes in. SharePoint mode for analysis services is one of the few features that cannot be sysprepped. So you have to run a full install of it. It's an additional step. I wish it would, and I hope at some point we get to the point where it is. But right now, that is the one mode of analysis services that cannot be sysprepped. You can sysprep tabular mode, you can sysprep multidimensional mode, but not SharePoint mode. But I can, from this workbook, launch a PowerView report. So again, for your end users, there's no difference here. We're running in the cloud. That's the only difference. Everything else functionality-wise to your end users of these BI tools is the same. So that's really the key here. You know, your world will change. If you're the one that's responsible for spinning up and maintaining these environments, your world will change, but not as much as you might think. This is where the networking and the Active Directory become part of the BI world. Not that you need to be the expert, but if you're moving into Azure, you need to be able to have those discussions that you didn't have to have before. You didn't have to talk about where do I want to put this additional domain controller in. You didn't have to do that. You didn't have to talk about the network topology because it was just part of your IT infrastructure. And maybe as, you know, more IT departments embrace this, it won't be part of your role as a BI pro dealing with infrastructure. But right now, it is. That's how it comes into the BI world. With that, that's the content that I have. Are there any specific questions? Adam. The question was, you know, what kind of hiccups or challenges do we see when, you know, implementing this kind of thing? I just got the 5-minute warning. Perfect. One of them is, you know, setting up the virtual network wrong. And not so much setting it up wrong, but deploying a machine into the wrong subnet. Because in Azure, you can't just change where a machine lives. You have to recreate the machine in the new subnet. So you got to really make sure that, especially if you're scripting things, that you script them in a way that you're putting it all in the right place. Because otherwise, you do have to tear it down and restart. Now, it's not as drastic as it sounds. Tearing it down and restarting is a matter of deleting the VM definition but keeping the disk and creating a new VM definition, and everything works out fine. That's one of them. Another thing that I've personally run into problems with is, you know, making sure my load balancer probes are set up right. But the real kicker is, you know, making sure that you build your machines, you build your infrastructure out properly first, because it is hard to change it afterwards. And these are the things that the IT departments have been dealing with forever that are now more in the consumerization hands. The other thing is firewalls. Often forget firewalls because it's just, you know, out of mind. I'm opening an endpoint. Well, that just opening that endpoint doesn't automatically open the firewall for you. So that's another pitfall that you're going to run into in this world, is that you got to make sure that all those I's are dotted and T's are crossed. There is a paper out there on MSDN. If you search for installing SharePoint infrastructure as a services, or infrastructure as a service, we put out a paper with some scripts out on CodePlex on how to do this in a single server environment. So we've got PowerShell scripts to help you through building a single server where it's running Active Directory, it's running SQL Server, it's running SharePoint, it's running everything all in one box. But the scripts also deal with setting the firewall. They deal with opening the endpoint. They deal with all of that. That is now out on MSDN. And watch sqlcat.com toward the end of June, end of July, early August for some more information about doing that in a scale-out fashion. Anything else? Yes. The question was about the service account used for the SQL Server gallery images. SQL Server is installed using machine accounts in those images, so it's not using a domain account. It's not doing. You can domain join it when you provision it. But it's still going to use local machine accounts, but so you would have to go in and change them to domain accounts if you wanted to use domain accounts. So yeah, it's all individual machine accounts for each service. Yes, question in the back. Yes. No, I didn't mention that. No, I was just talking about the host being updated. Okay. So you own the VM. The VM's yours. So I don't know of us going in and updating it. I'm not sure, but I don't know. I'll be completely honest with you. We'd have to talk to an Azure guy about that. I know we do host updates because we just have to patch the hosts. But the VM, like my VMs that I created, when I provisioned them, I actually specifically told it in the provisioning script, turn off automatic updates, because I want to control that rather than having auto updates run. So you can do that in the provisioning. But yeah, it's a VM that you own. You own the operating system. You know, from the operating system up, it's yours. Anything else? Yes. Okay, how does Windows Azure SQL Database fit in with this? It is a complementary data source. You could use, in your BI environment here, you could set up data sources to pull data out of Windows Azure SQL Database. Not a problem. It's not a core part of the, you know, you aren't going to be able to install SharePoint and use Windows Azure SQL Database as a SharePoint backend. But if you have data sitting there that you want to report against, all you need to do is the connection string over to it, and you can work with it just fine. The question was, would performance be better with the Azure database compared to an on-prem database? From a latency standpoint, you're most likely going to be better, specifically if you're in the same data center. As far as query performance, it's a shoot. It's really the network transition time of moving the data around that is going to be the difference there. All right. Some related content. These are some other sessions. Some of them have already happened. I apologize, but catch them on the recording. They should be good sessions. If you want to talk to me, pretty much right after I pack up here, I'm going down to the Microsoft booth downstairs. We've got some resources here. The big thing, though, fill out your evals, please. My pitch here, the numbers are for the conference organizers. The comments are for me. If you liked something, tell me in a comment. If you didn't like something, tell me in a comment. That's where I grow as a presenter, is by reading your comments, and I do read them. So thank you very much. Thank you for being here early in the morning. Have a great rest of the day.